activate my Goblin Tar Belcher targeting you. Kira!
Hi. Is this Saga? Amulet? Bounce Land? Scapeshift? Concede. Maya?
We're talking about Regional Championship 10 that just happened, I was be 2 weekends ago now, here in Melbourne at the St. Kilda Town Hall. The format was Modern.
It was indeed.
And we were really interested. We had our Pro Tour Edge of Eternity's Modern episode where we talked about Modern for the first time. And it was really interesting. We kind of discussed what the metagame in the States looked like. And we kind of made some various little predictions about, you know, what do we think the metagame here is going to look like? And it was fairly similar. I think it was largely what we expected to see. I've got the breakdown here, so don't worry. The metagame here for Regional Championship 10 was 12% Esper Gorios, 10% Amulet Titan, 9.9%, nearly 10% Is It Prowess, 9% Jeskai Blink, 6% Zoo, 5% Belcher, 5% Affinity, 5% Energy, 4% Esper Blink, 4% Eldrazi Tron, 27% Other. So the dominating section was actually the other decks, which was really, really interesting. Now, you told me that you've not watched too much of it, even though I was doing commentary, you've not seen too much of the event. Do you know what deck won?
It was Ruby Storm.
It was Ruby Storm. Hilariously as well, what everyone was talking about, James Drake won RC10 here in Melbourne.
He is
congratulations. He is a member of the Brain Prawns team here in Melbourne. And he won an invite to Worlds, which is huge. He also got an invite to Pro Tour next year, as well as some awesome cashola prize. But hilariously, he won using Ruby Storm. And after he won, it proceeded to rain in Melbourne for 12 hours.
Yeah.
It was very, very funny. It was very, Ruby Storm wins, and then it stormed in Melbourne.
I mean, Raoul is not called the Monsoon Mage for nothing.
It's all starting to come together. It's all starting to make sense now. But the event was really, really awesome. I had a very good time. I was privileged and blessed to work with the commentary team, which was led by our very own Jim Dowling. I was commentating with Tom, and we were also joined by Rihanna and Quincy as our other commentary partners. It was a fantastic event. It was really fun. I really like Modern.
I was going to say, you were talking about that metagame breakdown, and I was like,
the percentages? The top deck is 12%, and then the next most represented deck is 10?
A 2% difference?
The top two decks of the metagame were 22%.
Cumulative.
And the other category was 27%.
Modern's looking pretty good right now.
Modern's looking amazing right now.
Modern's so much fun.
The power level.
So juicy,
the
right?
The play patterns.
The lines. One of my favorite things about Modern in general is that because the cards are so powerful, but the decks are often so linear, mm-hmm. the lines you have to find are like really thin and convoluted and specific, but actually sitting down and puzzling them out is so good. And that's before you even get to Amulet Titan, right? Amulet Titan is a whole other beast.
Interestingly, Amulet Titan did not make the top 8 here at RC10.
You know, that doesn't actually surprise me.
I think so many Modern players are teched against Titan and teched against Gorios.
Also, Melbourne specifically has a lot of very good Titan players, right? Titan players are a very specific, very known quantity in any Melbourne scene. So even if you just like take the existing metagame breakdown aside and you're like, oh, I'm playing Modern in Melbourne, I am almost certain to play against Titan at least once.
I do believe Jin Hao Young played Titan 4 times.
Yeah.
And only dropped one match against them and beat every other Titan player. So 75% win rate against Titan specifically. Crazy.
Wild, right?
But the games are so interesting to watch. Again, like you say, the lines can be so thin or hard to see. And even as a commentator, watching these matches play out, predicting what people are going to do, predicting the lines that people are going to take, even though sometimes I don't get it 100% correct, there was a really, really interesting moment where it was Affinity versus Domain Zoo. And the Affinity player had Leyline and two Scions out, which is scary because those Scions have Flying, Vigilance, First Strike, Hexproof,
Lifelink. And one other, I think.
Yeah.
Because they natively have Flying.
They natively have Flying, but one of them grants things Flying, so it doesn't matter.
Ah, sure.
Yeah, it's like the... Something gives. Correct us if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong. But, and the Affinity player goes to attack with like a giant Kappa Cannoneer. And it's a favorable block for the two Scions to get in front of the Kappa Cannoneer. And we had seen on the camera that the Affinity player had an Otawara in hand. And I'm sitting there going, Otawara bouncing one of the Scions is like such a huge tempo play, forgetting they have Hexproof. Such an unbelievable, you know, if you can find a way to bounce one of the Scions, you're in such a good position, you know, go to attacks, go to blocks, you know, go to damage resolving, Otawara channel bounce Leyline. And I'm sitting there in the booth with Tom going, Otawara channel bounce on the Leyline. This is amazing. The Leyline goes back to hands. The Kappa Cannoneer now is going to take out both of the Scions and not trade with them.
We love those lines.
Oh, it was amazing. It also negated all of the life gain. It negated like the first. It was amazing. And these players, especially in Modern, because the format is so powerful, you have to be able to toe those lines and you have to be able to see those gaps where they are and take them. And so it was so much fun getting to sit there and watch incredibly talented Magic players just play out of their minds.
Yeah, Modern in particular is a format that rewards experience, right?
Yes.
The more you play Modern, the more familiar you are with these lines, the better at Modern you will be. And that's like true of all things, but it's particularly true in Modern. So being able to see people who have sat down and prepped a bunch and who know their decks inside out, sit down and play some really good Magic, it's such a treat.
Look, and to be fair, like all of that being said, watching people play like good games of Magic is awesome. There were definitely a couple games that you were just sitting there feeling awful for the player. There was a match where Boros Energy was going up against... It was some deck where the graveyard was important. Oh, it was up against Storm. It was up against James Drake. And the energy player was stuck on one land for five turns.
Calculated risk.
And it was so painful because we could see that there was a Thraben Charm in hand and a Damping Sphere. And those two cards would have won the game. And instead never ripped a land off the top. And died. And it was so unfortunate because it wasn't as though the energy player had nothing to do and had nothing against Storm and was just going to fold to the Storm deck. The tech was there. The tech was in hand, but the lands weren't. And that is, you know, and the same thing happened in the finals. The finals was Christopher Tong on Esper Goryeos against James Drake on Ruby Storm. And the Ruby Storm deck can win on turn two. And you have to be very cognizant of that fact. Like, they only need, like, two rituals and a Ruby Medallion and they can win very handily. And so, Christopher Tong on, you know, this is the deciding game. It's game two. James Drake won the first game. We go to... Oh, wait, no. This would have been... I believe this was game three. Even I don't remember. So much happened. So much happened that weekend. But in the deciding game, again, I'm pretty sure James Drake 2-0'd and swept the match. But in the deciding match, Christopher Tong on turn two taps out for a Psychic Frog. And then passes back. And then James Drake wins. And in my head, I was sitting there going, as long as you have the force of negation, you're pretty much okay. Because if you can stop a Ruby Medallion resolving, you'll be in a pretty decent position. And Psychic Frog, the Ruby Storm deck plays Ral. And that's it. That's the only creature that the deck plays. And you can get through with a giant frog and win. And so, you know, I'm sitting there. This is going to be huge. This is going to be a really fantastic moment. You tap out, bluff the tap out. You have Force of Negation. And, you know, passes back. James casts Ritual, Ruby on the stack. Pauses, resolves, the game's over. And it was so crushing as well to watch that because it didn't feel like a game. I watched someone resolve a Psychic Frog and then I watched a player win. But that's you know, it's so different from Standard in that way. Understanding that that's kind of how the cookie crumbles.
Modern's a very cool format. And yeah, there are going to be some number of, they're not really non-games, right? But they're games where small, specific decisions are very highly impactful.
Yes.
And there are decks designed to capitalize on this. And Ruby Storm is one of them, right? Yep. And it's worth noting that Ruby Storm winning on turn two is not an easy thing to do, right? It does require Ruby, two rituals at least, and then a bunch of additional ways to go off, right? And in a starting seven, you know, that is... It is not a mean feat by any stretch of the imagination. It's definitely doable, but it's like, okay, if this is happening 30% of the time, right? If Christopher Tong is sitting there thinking, okay, I'm on the play.
And that's what he was on the play.
Yep, I'm on the play. Probably only had two lands in hand and was like, okay, well, I have this opportunity to put a threat down that is going to draw me to lands, that is going to close out the game, but I have to go shields down for a turn.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a 30% chance that I lose next turn. Right?
It's very calculated.
Yeah. But if this frog resolves and I live to see the next turn, I have, you know, counterspell consign in hand, I have a frog in play, I'm like 70% to win that game.
Yeah.
So I need to fade the 70% to get to the 70%. And sometimes... they just have it. Neoform is like this too, right?
Yes. Look, and what I will say is I have a huge amount of respect for players who go out swinging and players who go out trying.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do anything, you'll die anyways. And so it is better to toe that 30% line. It is 100% better to take the risk. It's better to toe the line and make the play. Because if the play gets you possibly 70% closer to winning, it's the right line to take. 30% closer to losing, you know, give or take, but that's just math. That's just how the game plays out. But if you just decide to passively accept the loss, that's not a game for anyone, and especially you. And that doesn't teach you anything. That doesn't improve your skills. That doesn't, you know, in the future help you threat assess any better. And so, you know, what I hope the lesson in the line there is was to have the force of will backup and make sure that, you know, if you tap out for this play to potentially increase your, you know, future EV, have the counterspell backup.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in an ideal world, I'm sure you would, right?
Yes.
But, like, that's also part of
the variance.
That's part of the consideration, right? If you're tapping out on turn two for a Psychic Frog as Chris Tong, you are bluffing that you have the Force of Negation, right? That is, you are looking at your opponent dead in the eye and you're saying, okay.
Go for it.
I have the Force of Negation. I'm just going to counter it and you're dead. So James Drake had to decide, okay, is it better for me to try and go off now where all I have to fade is exactly Force of Negation? Or do I have the kind of hand that can hold and slowly outvalue the Esper Blink deck, which is a very hard thing to do? And it's something that Richard Owen says a lot. Richard Owen, for those of you who don't know, is a very well-known Storm player in 7-point Highlander. And he often says, one of the things that makes me, you know, one of the better Storm players in Melbourne is I just call people's bluffs way more than anybody thinks I should, right? I'm like, okay, yeah, you're threatening the Force of Will.
Have it.
Yeah, I'm just going to make you have it because I think you have that card once in every 30% of the time, and I like those odds.
Yeah.
Right? If you're sitting down and you're like, great, I can do a thing and I'm 70% to win the game.
May as well.
That's pretty good, right? We like those odds. And that is one of the skills of playing these very, the like linear, powerful combo decks, is that sometimes you just need to be like, you know, F it, we ball.
Well, and look, Christopher Tong is a very good Magic player.
Oh, certainly.
Like, I'm not sitting here saying, like, this was terrible, bad player, blah, blah, blah. Chris Tong is an amazing player. He placed second.
Chris Tong could beat both of our skills combined with a blindfold and one hand tied behind his back. Chris is an incredible Magic player.
Chris is a very good Magic player who has played Pro Tour, plays high-level events, incredibly skilled. And I have no doubt that's exactly, like, if I bluff the force and he, like, takes the bluff, I'm 70% to win. Like, that's a calculated move. And
he has the kill on turn two in hand, which is unlikely.
Yeah. And so it's, again, really incredible to watch skill expression play out in an arena like this. And the matches that I got to watch were awesome. And it was so fun because there was so much variance in the field. I got to watch Paris play Jeskai Day's Undoing, which was a Narset lock. And a very cool, they didn't get to Narset lock. My heart goes out to you, and I'm sorry. But the concept of the deck was fantastic. And I really like the Isochron Scepter Orym's Chant lock. I think it's a very cool play for those decks. I think the lock is brilliant. And we got to see Broodscale, and we got to see, like, old Broodscale as well. Matt DeWitt, good old Dimmers, was on a variant of the lock, which was an Agatha Soul Cauldron Broodscale deck with Young Wolf, Yawgmoth, Wall of Roots.
Ooh, I love a Yawgmoth deck.
It was a very, very cool deck. And so the field was wide open. The decks were cool. The expression amongst players was really fantastic. The matches were fun. There were tight moments. There were close calls. It had everything.
What was your favorite deck of the event? Not to put you on the spot or anything.
favorite deck of the event? I still really like energy.
Sure.
I still really like energy.
They put two copies in the top eight, right?
There were two copies in the top eight. James Drake went up against one of his teammates on energy. I still really like energy. I think it has a lot of really cool, like, utility. I'm really curious. We just talked about Wan Shi Tong. If there's a deck that plays that, I feel like that's where I want to be because I find that deck really cool.
I don't think it's just going in Esper Blink.
It could just go in Esper Blink. It's not a great target of blinking, though, is the only thing I'd say.
No, but, like, the blinking part of Esper Blink is not most what that deck is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That deck is a Psychic Frog Quantum Riddler deck. Right. It's just a mid-range deck that will incidentally kill you with an Ephemerate some of the time.
Some of the time, yeah. I don't know. I'm curious to see how Modern changes. I actually really do like Ruby Storm. I think the deck is really interesting. I think the way that it plays, because sequencing is really important in that deck. It sounds crazy, but you do have to play your spells in the right order in
what?
A deck like Ruby
in
Storm.
A Storm deck?
Well, especially when so much of the Ruby Storm deck is digging and exiling and refining, you know, finding more rituals, finding more Wrenn's Resolves and things like that. You do actually have to be very careful about the order in which you do things so that you can eventually, because the deck plays Wish, so that it has access, if it can't get to the Grape Shot in the main deck, it has access to the Grape Shot in the sideboard. You got to be careful because it is easy to fizzle. And not for nothing, there were moments where, you know, and I really respect Storm players of all kinds who do this. When they're playing Storm, as soon as they've cast more than two spells, they pull out the Storm Tracker. Much respect. Even if they're not intending to Storm off on that turn, I respect the diligence a lot to make sure that you are keeping proper track of it so that when you do, you're doing it properly. And also to psych your opponents out.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
I can see it in your eyes. And also to psych your opponents out. But I actually just think it's a good habit. Like, it's a good habit to build. And I think that's something that I heard a lot from Modern players at this event was good habit building. And properly keeping track of your tokens, properly keeping track of energy, properly keeping track of Storm and how much, you know, and from Titan players, especially keeping track of exactly how much mana and which colors are floating. It's so important to get that correct. And so the good habit building that I was hearing from players, really incredible because it's a responsibility that's on you. It's not your opponent's responsibility to keep track of how much floating mana you got and what colors there. It's your responsibility. If you have, you know, 4 blue mana and not 5, and that's the difference between winning, that's important to know.
It's also required at competitive rules enforcement as well.
Yes.
There's a, like, you know, you can't track your mana with dice. You have to write it down or do it in some way that isn't being knocked. I know that Richard Owen does this with Pokemon energy, for example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you need to keep track of things like energy and your life total with pen and paper, something that can't be knocked. And I think you can use the companion app to do it as well. There's just, like, a lot of little stuff that's like, yeah, this is a professional level event. We expect you to be capable. We expect you to keep track of your gameplay. And we expect you to be clean. And if it's not clean, there are consequences.
Now, here's an interesting thing that I will say, because the very first match that I got to commentate was Brennan Crawford against Isaac Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And Brennan's a Titan player.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was on feature match, they were tracking mana on dice so that it was visible to camera. Is that allowed in a judge type situation? Is that allowed because the viewers want to see it?
Coverage is a little funny.
Yeah.
And the answer, as always, is it's at the head judge's discretion.
Mm-hmm.
On coverage, and you see this at the Pro Tour as well, it is reasonably standard practice to use dice because it's not just the players keeping track of the board state. It's also the judge who's sitting at the table and the commentators and, you know, the 1,000 people watching the live event, right? There's just a lot more checks and balances.
Yeah.
The reason you keep track of it in paper or, you know, through some non-knockable means when it's 1v1 is because if there's nobody else watching and something happens and you call a judge, the judge needs to be able to come over and use the information that you have to kind of use, like, backwards induction, essentially.
Right.
To find what the board state should be, to find what the mana should be. And that is much easier to do in a coverage setting. So making the concessions for the viewer experience is a lot easier to do, right? It doesn't come with the same consequences that it would if you were like, yeah, everybody can use their D6s to track their mana across the course of the event.
It's really interesting as well, like, mentioning judges' role here, because the judges at this event were really, really lovely. And there were moments where we had to call judges for things that happened on coverage. I think the most notable example of that was a Domain Zoo match where they had started with a ley line in play, which allows your fetch lands to tap for mana when normally they don't. And there was a moment in the game when the ley line got exiled and, you know, the zoo, you know, goes back to the zoo player's turn. She starts her turn, draws, you know, goes and taps all 3 lands and plays a Clarion Conqueror. One of the lands is a fetch that no longer taps for mana. And you very quickly have to just, boop, we need to go get a judge to the table. You know, we need to make sure that this is fixed, because it is actually really important to the integrity of the game that the rules are being followed. And there is no longer a game piece that allows this fetch to tap for mana. We have to fix that.
Yeah. And it's one of the wonderful things about coverage as well, is like, something like that is so obviously unintentional.
Yes. It's like, you've had a ley line out for so many turns. Yeah. You've been tapping it for mana. It hasn't been an issue because it's been allowed within the rules of the game at that time. And then suddenly the rule within the game changes and you're just moving really quickly. And when you're on coverage, there's a lot of, like, stress and tension. You have to think a lot harder because it is not just you and your opponent playing the game at the table anymore. It's now you, your opponent, the coverage team, the head judge, and everyone at home who's tuning in.
And not to mention a slew of bright lights.
A lot of bright lights. You know, there could be more people gathering around the feature match table to watch what's going on. And you have keyboard warriors at home who are really paying attention to everything that's happening. And so, you know, you call a judge and the judge, of course, is not going to take you out in handcuffs. They're just going to say, like, we're going to rewind to a state at which we can fix this. You know, the intention is that you are going to play exactly the same spells this turn as you intended, which is you're going to cast the Clarion Conqueror, but we're going to resolve the fetch first so that you can do this legally. And that's exactly what happened. We rewind a few things, we take it back, Clarion Conqueror to hand, we're going to fetch, you know, adjust the life totals, we're going to go get the land that we want. Do you want basic or a shock? We're going to go to get a shock. Cool, we'll take 2 for that. We're going to now fix this. Board state is now acceptable. You know, you can cast your spell and resolve it. Beautiful. And the game proceeds.
And these things happen, right?
Like, we are still just human beings playing a game.
Yeah, and a complex game at that. If you're one of the wonderful people who showed up to our live show, we had a whole show about how Magic is really complicated.
Yes.
And yeah, like, mistakes happen. That's literally what the judge team is there for. And we are so lucky in Australia. And tooting my own horn a little bit here. But
are you a judge or something?
The judge team in Australia is just amazing. We have one of the like best, tightest like conglomerates of judges in the world. And it's so, so good. The caliber of judging in Australia is really, really high. And yeah, highly, highly recommend. The judges are great. Thank you, judge team.
Yeah. And of course, at these regional events as well, it's not just the main event. There were Mystery Booster 2 drafts happening. There were Spider-Man drafts. There were Chaos Sealed drafts. There was all kinds of really interesting events happening.
There
was
a 5K on Sunday.
There was a 5K event.
Win a foil sheet, I think.
There was a standard win a foil sheet, which I'm really sad I couldn't have participated in because they had 7 people and I could have been the 8th. I could have been so close, but I was keeping in line with my professional responsibilities of commentating the finals.
You weren't going to duck commentating the finals to go play a 3-round standard sheet?
No, even though it was a Edge of Eternity's rare foil sheet as well. Ooh, which would have been so beautiful. So congratulations to whoever won that. Right there. Congratulations to whoever won the sheet. I hope you like it. It could have been me. But this is also an open invitation to when there are regional championship events in your areas, you should go to them. There are side events that are happening. There are usually also vendors there selling cards. I know Plenty of Games was there. So it is a really worthwhile way to get closer to professional Magic events, even if you yourself are not that interested in competitive play. There are drafts. There are sealed events. There's Commander free play. There are, you know, tickets for the prize wall, and there's really cool prizes that you can get. They have secret layers. They have full sets. You know, it's a really fun community-focused event. And yes, of course, there's a really big, really serious tournament happening in the background, but that doesn't have to be the only thing that brings you there. You can go and just watch.
RCs are, like, not that different from Magic Cons, right?
They are just much smaller scale.
Yes, yes, obviously. But, like, they're just, like, a cool Magic event happening around another big Magic event. And that's kind of cool. Highly recommend. They're great. Go.
There's often artists as well. Like April Prime was at this one. And she's done she did the special guest Lord Windgrace.
Yeah, I think Kellogg Loops was at the last one as well.
There's always really, like, we have an amazing, amazing selection of artists here in Australia. Like, you wouldn't believe it. And so go to these events, whether you are a, you know, burgeoning competitive player and you're going to play your first RC, or you're LCQing on Friday to see if you can get a chance to play in the RC, or you're just there for the side events. There was a...
Or the Mystery Booster Draft.
Mystery Booster Draft.
One of the best, one of the most fun things to do is Mystery Booster Draft in RC, because there's always enough product and it's always so fun.
There was also a Highlander side event as well, and a standard side event, as we mentioned. So there's not just whatever event is happening, you know, RC 11 that's going to be happening next year. I believe it's up in Sydney is RC 11.
Sure.
And that's going to be standard. Okay. But there will probably also be a modern side event. There may also be a Highlander side event. So it's definitely well worth checking out what's going to be happening, because RCs are free entry events.
Don't need to buy tickets.
You don't need to buy a ticket
unless
for them.
You're playing in the main event.
If you are playing in the main event, you will need to buy a ticket. But if you just want to play side events, you just have to pay for the side events. And that's really fantastic in a world where we have Magic Cons and Command Fests that are ticketed events. These are awesome, low-stakes, free entry events for most players.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's really, fun. Really awesome.
Come along. Go watch some people play Magic or play Magic yourself.
I'm really excited for the next RC. I'm excited for Standard to be coming back into the competitive play season, especially as we head into the Avatar season. I'm curious to see how decks change. We've also got a ban announcement coming up. And
I'm going to say I'm excited to find out what Standard looks like in a week's time.
By the time this episode comes out, the bans will have already happened. So we're here living in ignorance, you know, still in a VV world. So things are definitely going to change in the next week, and that's going to be really cool to see what happens. So,
you know what we always say? More magic, more of the time.
More magic, more of the time is always a good thing. And with all that said, that's all we have for you today. We look forward to seeing you again next week. New episodes release on Mondays at 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. You can keep track of all of our releases at RaiseMTG on both Instagram and Blue Sky. You can find me on the same platforms at Kira Bobira and Maya at MayaMTG. A big thank you to the Hen House Recording Studios for the ongoing use of their space. And until next week, remember, he wept not for what was, but what could never be.